From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Of the Oxford Exxon Podcast on this Wednesday. Jeffrey Wright joining us today on the show. We'll talk about John Rhys Plumlee and Matt Corral. We'll talk about a lot of things with Jeffrey, including some NFL stuff coming on. We moved him up a day this week because we have Ross Bjork tomorrow. So Ross's schedule was a little tighter than Jeffrey's, but we appreciate Jeffrey every single week for giving us a lot of minutes every week here on the podcast. It's brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Through Halloween, free gas for a year, sweepstakes. You know to take advantage of that. All you got to do is get a Mobile Rewards Plus card. At least 8 gallons of gas. You're automatically entered into that contest to get free gas for a year with Blue Sky and the Oxford Exxon. And we are in the Clark Ford studio around us.
We are indeed. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. You call that number. You ask for my friend Corey Clark. You tell Corey what Ford product you are looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. Simple, right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can shop it around, or you can do what I've done 3 times now, and that is get into a Clark Ford. You'll love the product. You'll absolutely love the service after the sale. Corey wants to be your truck guy. He wants to be your car guy. People wonder, what do you mean when you say that? Well, call the number and you'll start to find out. 662-257-1900.
Somebody asked on the live stream why we don't pre-record ads, because they're much more effective when you read them.
That exactly.
Is why. There is a lot of science behind it, actually. We have purposes. Yep. Because, I mean, in all honesty, I mean, it's fine to talk about. You don't go into actual breaks, so people are more likely to stick with you. More people are likely to not skip forward in the show or anything. So yeah, there's a science behind it. We've got stats and everything in our ad packs that explain why we do it the way we do it.
Yeah,
so
it's almost like we learned a little bit as
we've gotten better. We figured it out over time. So appreciate people with us with the stream again. It's going well so far. I think we're going to keep it up on Saturday night, even with the Rebels back at home. That is the current plan. Give us some feedback on that. Get on Twitter, get on the message board. Tell us what you think about that. Do you want the show after home games as well as road games? What are you thinking about that on a Saturday night? So help us out a little bit there.
For the people that say, well, what does that mean? I lose in coverage.
Nothing.
Really nothing. We'll send Archie. And he'll get video. It might mean a little less player video because there's only one of him. And when the players all come in at once, he might not be able to get everybody. It might mean that some of the player stuff that you would normally get on Saturday, you don't get until Sunday, which is whatever. That's about it.
You don't lose anything head coach or coordinator-wise. You don't lose anything analysis-wise for sure.
I'll still write the column that I always write.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals where, I mean, I think I'll go until I have to get out of there and get to the studio is kind of what's on my mind. We've been talking about it all week, and I thought, okay, go watch till whatever and then find a break point to get over here. I don't know if that's halftime. I don't know what that is, but nonetheless, that's kind of the thought process. As we it went really well on Saturday, so we think we're going to expand that, try to keep it going. And
yeah, you could leave at halftime and be here.
Not miss any game is the point.
Yeah, right.
As long as there's not some mass exodus at the time.
Are you predicting chaos?
No, I'm not predicting chaos. I don't know what I'm going to predict yet. I haven't done picks yet.
Have you? No, I've not done my picks yet. I've put them in. I did pictures last night when I was watching the baseball game.
Your mailbag is up this morning, and you got some really weird questions this week.
Yeah, I haven't published it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, okay. I went in and read it, the admin.
I have been repeatedly asked here lately to play the role of therapist, basically, is what people are asking me to do, and I don't know that I'm qualified.
Yeah, you have several of those questions, like when Bill Simmons used to do the big mailbag for ESPN, he would just put, yep, those are my readers at the bottom of it, and go, I can't answer that question, but... Wherever the most psychotic question or two of the day, that's where it would end up at.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Larry Joe, has a few of them.
He did. I saw one. One in particular.
His are more funny than anything else. His make me really realize just how old I am.
Did you pop champagne last night?
No.
I did not.
I was happy as a lifelong Nationals fan. I enjoyed the game. The Cardinals did come back and make it a little stressful at times, because I could not imagine them coming back and winning that game and then going on some
magical Red Sox Yankees kind of deal.
Yeah, that thought crossed my mind at one point, and I was like, "No, I don't think I could withstand that." And then I was happy when it ended. Congrats to the Nats. They have to now wait a week to play.
Yeah, because this other one's going to be a war.
And I think today's game's already been rained out.
Oh, has it?
I think so. It's pouring in New York, apparently.
2-1 Astros. Garrett Cole, excellent yesterday for Houston.
He is so good. He's going west. I've talked to
some. They're the best team.
The Astros are the best
team. They're the best team.
Yeah, they're the best team. They grind at-bats out. What was fascinating yesterday was even the Yankees, who are probably not going to end up getting there, they made Cole really work. Their at-bats are just so good. They're a good team. They're a really good team. They're a team that when it's over, they'll look back and say, we were championship caliber in just wrong time.
Yeah, the Cardinals were not in that realm of the two AL teams. Now, the Nationals, frankly, aren't either, but they do have those two arms.
They have four arms.
Well, yeah.
Corbin was really good. Yeah. And Sanchez has been really good.
Can they score?
Probably not enough to win the World Series.
But it's just 4 out of 7.
But they pitch well enough to make the thing interesting. When Strasburg throws his slider like that, he's not hittable. Are you following this? We're jumping around. We're Wednesday.
It's Wednesday's become our weird day. Really, of the week, Wednesday has become the strange one. There's a news vacuum in the middle of the week.
I will get back and talk about what happened post-practice, because really it was nothing. We asked to speak to Matt Corral. We did not get Matt Corral. I don't know why we don't get Matt Corral. I don't understand what they're all afraid of. I don't get it. Regardless, we got Dante Evans, who's going to start in place of Jaquez Jones. He talked about that. He seemed to be perturbed at a couple of my questions about missed tackles and stuff.
Jaquez Jones?
No, Dante Evans.
Oh, sorry.
Seemed to be a little, not perturbed. You could see the thought go through his mind, man, the media is negative. You could see the thought just literally run across his forehead. And I didn't think that was being particularly negative, but I think sometimes a lot of programs do this. It's us against the world. It's us inside this building, and et cetera.
And Dante hasn't done many interviews over his 3 or 4 years.
So we got him. We got Freddie Roach, and we got Scotty Phillips, who
was asked about by committee running back.
Yeah, he said he's not frustrated, but it's taken some toll off his body. And frankly, as a guy who I think is good enough to play in the NFL, he's probably telling the truth.
Raph Well would have loved some toll off his body for 4 years at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, no doubt. So here's the question I was going to ask you. Are you keeping up with this Tyler Skaggs thing with the Angels?
I know a base level of it. I'm not glued to it. So feel free to set it up and then we'll talk about it.
So Tyler Skaggs died in July in...
the Angels pitcher.
He's the Angels pitcher. He died in July. He pitched on a Saturday night. He died on Monday night, Tuesday morning in Dallas. They had started a road trip to Texas and Houston. He, when the autopsy came back, they had opioids, basically, two different opioids and alcohol in his system. He died asphyxiated on his own vomit. Mm-hmm. And it has since come out that, of course, there was an investigation. And what's come out in that investigation is that the Angels director of communications, I think his last name is Kay, provided opioids.
Yeah.
To Skaggs on multiple occasions, including several days before he died, and was in his room the night, hours before he died, watching him snort crushed opioids. Three lines of opioids. He said he knew what two of them were. He didn't know what the other one was. Someone said, well, it's cocaine. They didn't find cocaine in his system. So it was fentanyl and something else. And so there's what's happening now is not only an investigation, but the investigation's going into the Angels, because the director of communications back in April, Chase, had a drug overdose. And his superior with the Angels came and checked on him at the hospital. And according to the story, The director of communications' mother was at the hospital too, and while she was there, Tyler Skaggs was texting him asking for more drugs. And she told the Angels superior to please get the Angels players to stop bullying her son for drugs. How high up did this go in the Angels organization? What will the ramifications be? How big of a problem are opioids for in Major League Baseball, in professional sports?
I'm still gathering my thoughts here, so this is going to jump around. I don't necessarily think this is not the main part of the story by any means. Are the Angels culpable?
Potentially.
Liable here?
Yes, potentially. I've read a lot about it because it is absolutely fascinating. The more you deep dive into this, they've interviewed several players. Los Angeles Times had a story out today. Matt Harvey, Andrew Haney, Trevor Cahill.
Sure.
They've interviewed a bunch of guys. And Kay also said that he knew of at least five players. He didn't specify whether they were current or former Angels, but five other Angels that were abusing opioids. It's a long season. Yeah. 162 baseball games following 6 weeks of spring training is a long season. You get every pitcher's arm hurts. When you watch a pitcher pitch, his arm hurts. Everything hurts. They're all looking for pain relief.
Just the newest version of back in the day, the greenies and all that stuff.
So what happens here? There's a lot of speculation that baseball is going to have to, and look, if it's happening in baseball, just imagine an NFL locker room.
Turnaround times and yeah.
You ever been down on a field for an NFL game? I've told this story before. I'll never forget it. It struck me. It's back when I was covering the SEC as a whole and I was covering the New Orleans Saints every Sunday. I can't remember what game I covered on Saturday, but I got to Tampa in time for a Saints-Bucks game. And they let you down on the field at the end of the games at Tampa, or they did then. And watching the last 6 minutes of an NFL game on field level was terrifying. I remember thinking, I don't know how any of these guys walk the next day, much less get ready to play another one of these games. The collisions at the college level are one thing. They're something else. The collisions at the NFL level.
The overall game speed is so much higher.
It is like a series of train wrecks.
Yeah.
How guys get up and play the next day. And so it begs the question, how do guys get up and play the next day? How do guys get up?
Well, and now with TV getting all screwy, some of these teams have like four games in 22 days or something. Like, well, there's crazy stuff.
So I was reading about University of Houston. You know, they played four games in 19 days to open the season because they TV and all that stuff. What are they doing for pain? What are you doing for pain maintenance? How big of a deal is this Tyler Skaggs thing the beginning of a big story? A lot of people around professional sports think yes. Like, there's a lot of talk about NBA guys that, like, if you're in an NBA hotel, all that you see is marijuana. They're all smoking it. Is that for pain relief? Is that to relax? What is that? The opioid thing's a big deal, though. This is becoming a major story in Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball is approaching the end of their collective bargaining agreement, and this is going to get collectively bargained.
So, what do you anticipate baseball doing here on an organizational level, and then if you're the Angels?
Well, the Angels, who are very close to a deal with Joe Maddon to become their manager, there's a lot going on.
I'm Maddon. It's enough to go. Nah, he can get other jobs.
Well, the question,
nah.
Excuse me, if I'm Joe Maddon, the question that I have is, how high up did this go?
Well, it sounds like, high enough.
Did it go all the way to the top?
I mean, you're talking about like GM?
I'm talking about GM, owner. Who knew? Listen, when they get word that day in Dallas that Southlake, it was in Southlake Hilton.
Okay.
When they get word at that Hilton that Tyler Skaggs is dead in his room. We've got a game tonight. We've got to cancel the game. The team's already at the ballpark. We've got to get them back over here. And in the midst of all the public statements, you know someone in the back room said, what the hell happened and who knew what? And you know somebody said, y'all know he had an opioid issue. Remember that newspaper?
It was very early on. It was, hey, how do you sort of get this in here? How do you get to this point of the story?
Yeah.
Because obviously nobody wanted to lead the next morning with, hey, here's whatever's going on with the Angels. But
that newspaper wrote Voice of God that it was a drug overdose.
Yeah.
Someone told them drug overdose, whether it was family, the team. Someone told that reporter drug overdose for him to write it the way that he wrote it.
Yeah, of course. There's no doubt.
They knew right away. And yeah, I know you can't overdose from smoking marijuana. It's one of the reasons that I don't know. I don't really even have a problem. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Legalize it, tax it, make it a revenue stream. That's lots of people are doing it.
Very little difference from alcohol, whatever.
I frankly think it's a potential, in this state, it's a potential growth industry. You could grow it here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Ole Miss has for a number of years.
As long as we don't change the flag or the license plate, I think that's what's important.
Those license plates are pretty ugly, the new ones. I was reading a story the other day where it's...
Why don't you head back up to Rhode Island or somewhere?
It is making me... I saw a story where more people are getting personalized plates now because of how ugly the actual plate is.
Caroline wants a personalized plate so bad she doesn't know what to do.
Are you blocking her on that?
Well, I mean, I've just in the past been like, come on, you're 16. But it isn't...
Well, you have a personalized plate.
Yeah, but I'm not 16. I pay for it myself.
Oh, okay. I don't have a personalized plate.
You don't?
No.
That's an ugly plate.
Well, I don't have that plate yet. I still have the old plate.
Well,
that's what's happening. As people are going and having to get the new plate,
your day's
they're
coming.
Running into problems. They don't like it.
Your day is coming.
I don't think I'll go to the effort.
You don't?
No. I don't think so. Does it really matter? I mean, what difference does it make?
I don't know.
That's not something I'm worried
about.
Look
good, feel good. I'm just playing. I don't know. I got the black.
It's still weird
plate.
To me that you're driving a pickup with a lab on the tag.
I have two labs.
Well, okay.
I like my dogs. They do look like they look urine colored. It's like someone said, "What color is urine? Do it that color."
Yeah, I mean, who had to pick that sheen? Like, could you not have anything else?
Yeah,
anything. The guitar was fine. The lighthouse was fine. The magnolia was fine.
Just, yeah, when you think about Mississippi, you think about magnolias. Just put a magnolia blossom on the middle of a plate and call it, I don't know, was it a hospitality state or something?
That is correct,
just call
yes.
it that. That's cool. Most people like hospitality. Get 90% approval on that.
Why change it to begin with? Is there some...
I don't know.
Referendum where ever so often we got to change the design on a tag?
I don't think so because a lot
of... California's had theirs for 40 years.
Yeah, a lot of...
Hasn't moved.
A lot of states...
Alabama moves theirs a lot. Used to have like the stars over and all that stuff. It's switched over time.
Yeah. I don't know.
But we didn't make fun of Columbus Day again this year. It passed on Monday without us doing the big Columbus Day show. You know
it? I know. We didn't.
I was really upset because it didn't flash on my computer. So I didn't see it while we were doing the show, and then, dang it, I thought about going to the bank later, and they were like, no, you can't go to the bank. It's closed. And
it was all closed up.
Crap, I missed an opportunity. We could go back through the mistake that got him days named after in multiple countries.
And now everybody's taking his name away from cities and stuff because we
not a nice guy.
He wasn't a good person.
Is it okay to judge him by today's standards? Is that what you're saying, compared to some things?
I don't, but I, again.
You're not a good gauge. You're a good gauge on a lot of things. This is not a good one for you.
Who has time to worry about all that stuff? Or the energy? The world was different and there's nothing anybody
1492, Columbus sailed the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, he was just.
Nina Pinton, Santa Maria.
Those were his three?
Yeah.
Which one was he on, the Santa Maria?
I have no idea. That's what I had to learn in elementary school, and I still remember it.
Yeah.
You didn't know it was 1492?
I didn't.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue?
I knew the song.
Okay.
I'm well aware.
Are you?
Yeah. Come on, man.
They taught that in Ruston.
Heck yeah, they teach all the good stuff in Ruston. Lots of history. Coach Stone, world history. We watched so many videos.
Oh, you watch videos?
Oh, yeah. He didn't teach. He was just there to coach baseball.
Like History Channel documentary? Well, you wouldn't have had History Channel.
We wouldn't have had that. We just watched these old...
grainy footage.
Yeah. Things. Documentaries of history, and then we took a test.
Okay.
Slept a little, took a little nap.
We will talk a little football when we get back. We're going to go talk to Jeffrey in a second. People watching live stream, they've already heard from Jeffrey, so they'll hear the second half of the show in a second. But for the people on the recorder and the podcast, we appreciate all you guys as well. So we'll get to Jeffrey in 1 minute. First, I'll tell you about Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com/events. Find out everything going on in town this week leading up to Ole Miss and Texas A&M on Saturday night from Vaught Hemingway, Sky Garden, and Veld at the Chancellor's House tonight, 6:30 to 9 for that. Thacker Mountain, it's Thursday from 6 to 7:30 at All Square Books as always. And Live on the Lawn is Friday from 11:30 to 1. That's at the University Museum. And then the public double-decker bus tours on the 18th. That's Friday at 3 and 4 o'clock. They meet right there across from Funky's by Visit Oxford right there to load the bus. So you can do that at 3 and 4 o'clock with visitoxfordms.com. Bookmark it, find out everything going on in town this and every week.
And while you are in Oxford this weekend, if you're thinking about moving here, you're thinking about retiring here, whatever the case may be, I suggest that you look at Splinter Creek. It's a gated conservation community. It's located 8 miles southwest of Oxford, 75 minutes from the Memphis airport. Excuse me, the website is splintercreekms.com. Phone number is 601-898-2772. Call that number and you can schedule a tour with Tom Smith Land and Home Agents. Splinter Creek's been featured in Garden and Gun, Architectural Digest, Southern Living. It's 34 lakefront lots ranging in size from 2 to 25 acres, 650 acres of lakes, pine, and hardwood forest, 6 miles of private roads. It's really a beautiful property. It's a gorgeous area. Be a fun place to wake up each day and enjoy your morning cup of coffee. It's the lakes are kind of the main streets of Splinter Creek. You can check them out. They were built for swimming and quiet boating and fishing and stuff. It's really cool. The lakes are stocked with coppernose, bluegill, brim, largemouth bass. So if you're coming up, get a tour. Check out the website, splintercreekms.com. We're also brought to you by Blue Delta Jeans. They're kind of all over the place. Let's see where they are today. I haven't even I need to pull this up each morning because they go to different – they go to different places, and where are they? There they are. Blue Delta is, they'll be at the Grand Bohemian Hotel tomorrow, actually today and Wednesday in Mountain Brook. Have you ever been there? It's where the SEC.
Today is Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday. I can't keep up. Literally, I thought today was Tuesday. Even though we just said a minute ago today was Wednesday. It's been a weird week. Yeah, they're at the Grand Bohemian in Mountain Brook, which is a really cool hotel. So they're there. If you you want to get a private fitting, you can do that. All you have to do is send them an email at info@bluedeltajeans.com. Ask about their Gino. It's being pre-sold right now. Soft, comfortable, great group of colors. The sewing begins on Halloween, so don't miss the opportunity and reserve your spot in this first run of the great new fabric line from Blue Delta Jeans. And if you're searching for that unique way to brand your company swag, or you have a special event that you need to memorialize, I suggest Dead Soxy. They have you covered with their custom sock program. Click on the custom socks link. They'll walk you through the entire process from the complimentary digital mock-up before your order is placed to delivery, logistics, and even custom packaging. Dead Soxy is your place to create a gift they'll use time and time again. With all-inclusive pricing, no upcharges or fine print, the custom sock design process is as simple as it gets. Head over to deadsoxy.com, deadsoxy.com. Remember, you can still save 30% on general orders with the promo code REBELGROVE. Stay soxy.
Podcast is brought to you by Tyson Drugs and G&M. G&M right there on South Lamar in Oxford. Flu vaccines available with $0 copay on most insurance plans. No one has time to wait in line for the overworked pharmacist at the chain drugstore. Stop by one of their locally owned pharmacies where they have multiple pharmacists waiting to take care of you as quickly and painlessly as possible. Tyson Drugs on the square in Holly Springs. And to contact G&M, 662-236-2222. Now here's Jeffrey Wright. I haven't spoken to him, I did some text with my brother. Good morning to you, by the way. I just started the recorder here, but this Jalen Ramsey thing, What are we thinking? What's kind of the thought process here? Because they gave up a lot, but the Rams have been kind of a team that said, hey, we're going to get players. We're worried about that more than we are with anything else. And they're leveraging their future, but probably for a reason.
Yeah, I think if you're a team like the Rams, I understand it, because the odds of you finding, you know, at the whatever, say 25 through 32, wherever you're going to be picking in the first round, the odds of you finding a player as good as Jalen Ramsey, probably not all that high. But I do understand, like, if you start looking at their roster, I'm not sure if it's next year or the next year, like, it gets really, really thin. But I just don't think that the Rams are in play it safe mode. And to me, Jalen Ramsey, you know, when you consider all the injuries that they had in the back half, Jalen Ramsey's ability to play not only corner, but also, you know, play safety, essentially just be the best defensive back on the field, I think that can help with some of the problems and the injuries that they've had. I mean, you know, they clearly gave up more than the Steelers gave to go get Minkah Fitzpatrick, but also I think I'd rather have Jalen Ramsey than Minkah Fitzpatrick.
I had a little audio issue on the thing. I think I have repaired that now. People should be able to hear me on the live stream. We were not being heard there, so sorry about that, Joe. The Rams 3-3 sitting here right now, 49ers 5-0, Seahawks 5-1, something like that. Are they even a playoff team? If they're not, are they leveraging too much at the moment?
I think they're still a playoff team. I mean, we look at some of the Seattle teams that got off to bad starts, and they were still playoff teams. And as bad as the three-game losing streak has looked, I mean, the truth is the only really inexcusable loss was the Bucs loss. But, I mean, if you look at losing at Seattle, I mean, on a Thursday night, that's not exactly an unforgivable loss. The fact that they missed the field goal from a reliable kicker, I'm sure that makes it hurt more, but it's, you know, and then – you know, the 49ers have been a really good football team this year. So, you know, the threat for the Niners is that they have a really good team and they get to play a third place schedule. So that is advantageous for them. But if you look at the course of the NFC, you know, the Panthers are sitting here at 4-2. A good team, but I don't know if I believe in this for the rest of the way. You know, Atlanta appears to be headed closer to firing their coach than perhaps a playoff berth. You look in the North, the Vikings, probably the Vikings, Bears, Packers. So you're going to need to put together a run, but I think this team is capable of that. To me, like, it made sense to me in that you had so many injuries on the defensive end, on the defensive side of the football, that you had to do something that drastically changed your football team. And to me, this is one of those things.
Who in the NFC is even a Super Bowl contender? I mean, who's good enough to win a Super Bowl? Saints and...
Let's see. I think the Saints are. I think the Seahawks are. I think Russell Wilson right now is maybe the best quarterback in the NFL right now. He's certainly perhaps playing the best football of any quarterback in the NFL. I don't necessarily believe in the Niners to be a Super Bowl champion because I'm not that sold on Garoppolo. But with that being said, like, you cannot argue with their results. And Kyle Shanahan is getting the type of offensive results that he got when he was in Atlanta and he took them to a Super Bowl and they had a 28-3 lead. So, you know, I'm not dismissing them, but if you may bet on them today, I'm not. I think the Packers are legitimately a Super Bowl contender because on top of having Rodgers, that defense is extremely good. I mean, heck, the Lions, you know, every team basically in the NFC North is good, or, you know, is at least a team that, you know, can easily finish above 500. And then the East, I still think the Eagles are better than the Cowboys, but I'm not convinced of that by much, and I'm still not sold on either team. So I would say Packers, Seahawks, Saints are the true contenders, but then I don't have a huge problem if you say The Niners can get there. If you say the Rams can get there, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. I think after like 2 or 3 weeks, we kind of thought the AFC was better, but now we're starting to see the AFC is the Patriots by default, and then the NFC is this just wild, wild west arms race.
What do you make of the Patriots? I know that I know what the record is, but it's still really early in an NFL season. It's kind of the, you know, this, it's the, we're past the halfway point in the college season, and so people are talking about the stretch run. The NFL's not even to the halfway mark yet, so it's way too early to just completely judge an NFL team. But what do you see from the Patriots so far?
What I see from the Patriots is the best back end in all of football. Like, you look at their defensive backs, and they, all of them play like wide receivers with like attacking the football. And I don't think it's any coincidence. I think they knew what they were seeing the Kansas City Chiefs, and they knew that that was going to be their path forward. And so they built an extremely good defense. Kind of the unspoken thing is, like, you know, I mean, even against like the Giants, Brady throws for, you know, I think he completed 31 of 41, throws for, I think, 330 plus. And you watched him play and you're just like, was this good? Because it was unimpressive. But that does tell you that they are very efficient on offense. They know what they can do on offense. And so, yet again, you know, you look at Kansas City. Kansas City has a fatal flaw, in my opinion, in that they cannot stop the run for anything. I'm getting closer and closer on the Texans to buying into them. I still need to see a little bit more. The Colts are a good football team, but, you know, it feels like that they have a ceiling. But that offensive line, that running game, can basically take the air out of the ball. People may laugh, and y'all know that I'm not like exactly championing Josh Allen, but that team does make a lot of sense. They play really good defense, and they have an offense that kind of complements, you know, what the defense does, in that they hold the football. They've put some weapons around Josh Allen, and Allen is a legitimate threat to run the football and to kind of extend drives and let them hold the ball and keep that defense off the field as much as possible. So, like, I actually like the way that the Bills are constructed, but, you know, I know who I'm betting on if it's the Bills versus the Pats in the playoff game.
Yeah, I mean, but at some point it has to end. I mean, it has to end at some point, right? I mean, somebody finally gets them at some moment in time. I mean, Brady can't do this till he's 60. And there has to be a final point.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that no one wants to talk about is they won the Super Bowl last year and Brady wasn't good.
No, he wasn't good. He was very average. And this year, I'm not even sure he's average.
He was basically bad in the Super Bowl with the exception of the one drive. Now, I'm not taking away, you know what I mean? I'm not
saying, sure,
that's an undeserved Super Bowl champion, but I mean, that to me speaks to how good their collective roster is.
It's defense right now too. I mean, they don't allow anything.
We all talk about about Brady. Belichick's the best coach in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know who, you know, I know Shula, but I mean, historically, I don't even know who's in his league. Because he's doing it in an era, he's doing it in a 7-round draft era, he's doing it in the era of free agency, and essentially he's doing it in an era in which we see teams have runs, but nothing sustained, and he sustains it.
So we've asked everybody else, we got the question about 48 times on Saturday night during our live show, what are you doing with the quarterbacks at Ole Miss, Plumlee and Corral?
Oh, man.
It's such a complicated thing. When you try to break it down, it gets really complicated because one kid is so dynamic with his feet, and the other one is playing like a freshman, and yet they don't beat good teams.
Yeah, I almost wonder if Ole Miss is better off going with with Plumlee. Okay, I'm going to speak of it in truly a football sense. I'm not going to speak of it in terms of how complicated of an issue it actually is. Is that fair?
Yeah, sure.
I've actually come around to the idea that Ole Miss is probably better off going with Plumlee because they become something that you don't see. Like with Corral, they basically are some type of version of every other team that runs an offense that's based on an RPO, and it's an offense that you see commonly. When you have Plumlee in there, it's like the peak grit and grind Grizzlies, where you don't see this every night. Now, that incredibly limits your ceiling, but this team doesn't have championship aspirations. This team's trying to win as many games as possible this year and hope that there's a proverbial path to six wins so that they can, you know, claim a victory, be ahead of schedule, capitalize on a recruiting class. And I almost think with Plumlee, you might be, that might be your better path to win this year. I'm still not convinced that Plumlee is, I don't think, you know, I'm not expecting him to go out there and be Drew Brees, but the Pat White comparisons drive me insane. Pat White threw the football nearly 8 yards an attempt and completed, you know, 66% of his passes. That's not what John Rhys Plumlee is, at least not at this point in his career. And, you know, I thought Rodriguez did a nice job on Saturday of trying to give him some throws on earlier downs where the defense wasn't really expecting it. And I didn't think Plumlee did a great job. He also has, now I'll give him credit, he's not really turning the ball over because he has apparently been watching a lot of film of Jalen Hurts because he has got that patented first read, roll right, take off and run or throw it out of bounds down. I mean, just splendidly. And, you know, with a guy like his foot speed, that's not a bad play. That's not a bad play if you can get to the outside. And like, I'm not saying that's a bad strategy for him. But like, I watched when Corral came in, and the first thing you notice is just the significant difference in arm strength. You notice that he gives you an element in the passing game that you don't have with Plumlee. But the problem is with Corral, it's not like you are turning the ball over to a 70% passer that is just picking apart defenses. So while I think Corral has a chance to be the better quarterback, I'm not sure that Corral's the best way for them to win right now.
You know what else is interesting is, and this is the long range thing that where I say it gets complicated, because and people I get the email, and I'm sure Chase is probably starting to get it too. Why do you guys hate on Plumlee? I don't hate on Plumlee at all. What's interesting though is you've got to recruit wide receivers, and next year, not this class right now, but the next class is loaded with elite wide receivers. I mean, think DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, those type impact receivers that are out there. Antonio Harmon, Brandon Buckhalter, there are more. Are those guys going to come to an offense, even as if Plumlee, let's just say this is who Plumlee is, elite with his feet, scares the hell out of defensive coordinators, like the Missouri defensive coordinator was the, hey, I'm glad we don't play them anymore. I don't want to have to prepare for that. It's hard to prepare for that speed, et cetera, et cetera. Are you going to be able to recruit the type of wide receivers that you need? Because Chase and I always talk about this. I'm rambling. And we've talked about this with you too. How do you beat Alabama? It's not gimmicks. It's a vertical passing game. You beat Alabama by having a quarterback who can throw the ball down the field. That's how you beat Alabama.
I sat next to you guys for 4 years, and you know I've been screaming this since 2014.
Yeah, so
I used to hate when people say, like, you have to be balanced to beat Alabama. It's like, no, you don't.
No.
South Carolina beat them because they're balanced. They beat them because Steven Garcia had a career day. Yes, Marshawn Lattimore was an awesome back before that injury, but they won that game because Steven Garcia hit like 19 passes in a row.
Yeah, you got to have just enough running game to make them respect it. But you can beat them. You beat them in the air. And so, and I'm using them because they're the, for right now, and LSU might pass them, but for right now, they're the class of the league, the class of the country. And so that's the standard. I don't know that you can recruit those type of receivers. And if you suddenly can't recruit those type of receivers and you're dependent on this, I don't even know what you call the offense. I don't even know what it is.
They're running the Wildcat, but with a slightly more elevated passing game.
And I don't think you can recruit to that. That's my only thing about going with this offense long term. I get doing it right now. He's their best option to win Saturday night. No doubt in my mind. Plumlee gives them a better chance Saturday night against Texas A&M than Corral does. But long term, running a system, having a program, man, and I'm not saying Plumlee can't become a better passer, but he has to become a better passer for it to truly work in the league.
Ole Miss has had a lot of success recruiting wide receivers for a number of years. We know that. Here's a question, though. They almost all come from out of state. Mississippi football, isn't it geared more toward what State was able to do in state to get a bunch of running backs and offensive linemen and that kind of thing and play a different style of football anyway? I'm not saying to switch. I'm just saying when you do the wide receiver thing, you're really having to go get those from other places. You're having to raid Texas. You're going to Illinois. You do all these different things.
Dante Moncrief and Shea Hodge say hello.
They do. I understand that. There are some. But for the most part, you do it through Mississippi with linemen and running backs and those type of players.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a complicated issue because, in general, I think you should get the best players possible.
Well, of course.
Right, I know. I hope everyone's sitting down for that.
Appreciate it. That's why we bring you on.
Yeah.
I know AJ Brown's from Mississippi, and okay, you get my point.
Hey, this is how you move to Memphis, and you get the coveted 2-4 time slot after just 3 years of loyal service. I don't think State was good because they got the running backs and the linemen. Like, I think State was good because Dan Mullen's a really good football
player. Yeah, I'm just saying Mississippi has that type of player.
It does, but all the elite kids want to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
They got the guys like KJ Wright. They got their defensive guys were really good. Like, if you look at Mullen's best teams, and, you know, I just... Listen, it's well documented that I don't think Kirby Smart is smart, pardon the pun, but he wanted John Rhys Plumlee to play safety. Gus Malzahn wanted him to play slot. Like, they weren't questioning his ability to be an athlete that deserves to be on an SEC football.
Yeah, hell, nobody's questioning that. He's an elite athlete.
I think his foot speed proves that, but, you know, I'm not sold that at 185 pounds, what he does is a sustainable, like, I don't know if when you bring the best players into the room that you go, you know, this is our guy, you know, I'm just not sold on it, but
yeah,
that's not my responsibility.
I'm not either. I'm not sold on 23 carries a game for your quarterback in this league. And when someone dings you and then you know, all of a sudden you lose some of that speed because you're playing hurt, now what? That's my only thing. And listen, he's a great story. People say, why are you so down on it? I'm not. If John Rhys Plumlee becomes an absolute Ole Miss's version of Tim Tebow, wins the Heisman Trophy and makes Ole Miss a national title contender, cha-ching, it's good for my business. And it's a great story, and from all accounts, from people who know him, he is a wonderful kid. Young man, whatever term you want to use. But I've watched this league, you've watched this league, Chase has watched this league. I don't know. I've never seen... I mean,
Tebow's 245 pounds.
Exactly. Tim Tebow was a big person.
Tim Tebow took a hit and was never the same after that Kentucky kid filleted him.
Oh, you put him in the slot, and I think it's his best position. I mean, get the ball out in his hands in space. He can catch. He's got good hands. He's obviously got feet.
Here's the question. If I told you today, if the football gods came down today and told you 6 years from right now, John Rhys Plumlee is an NFL football player, what position do you think he plays?
Positionless, slot, moving around. Get him the ball in space.
Julian Edelman, Wes Welker.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Guy in the slot, in space, who can fly.
Yeah. Oh, he's an NFL player. I just don't think he's an NFL quarterback.
USC Steve Smith. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we're having to avoid the white comparisons.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really trying to do that. It was just what came to mind.
They're also one of the teams that utilizes the slot. So.
I mean, he's hell in space. And Rodriguez has done a really good job of getting him into space, and Rodriguez has done a really good job of drawing up plays that work for him in the middle of the field as well.
This is kind of another unspoken thing, though, that I do think factors in. It does feel like Rodriguez believes in Plumlee more than he believes in Corral. And I'm not saying that's not his job as a coach. His job as a coach, that's what he's paid millions of dollars to do, is to come up with the best game plan, call the best plays, and try to figure out a way for his team to win. Like, that's what an offensive coordinator's responsibility is. But it does feel like he feels more comfortable with Plumlee.
It's his type of quarterback.
Yeah.
He wants the guy that can run a little bit, that can do some different things. He likes the lack of poor decisions. But now, in saying that, Corral has more decisions to make because of his arm strength. Because he can do more things in the passing game, which does create more decisions. Plumlee, for the most part, has one or two things he can do down the field because there's not much. You know, the deep ball is normally underthrown, and it's sort of a jump ball. To me, that's going to kind of be what it is. Plumlee's improvement, from my standpoint, is, like we said yesterday, driving the ball through windows and getting really precise short and intermediate. I don't think the long game is ever going to be his play. But in college football, you can win games if you can throw the ball short and intermediate.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just not convinced he can do that.
And I just don't know. He's a true freshman. I have no clue. That was kind of my next question, is how much better can you get through your career?
Right, and listen, I'm not saying that he can't improve as a passer. That would be absurd to say that.
Of course.
I'm not that guy. But, I mean, Chase, watch. Corral has a good arm, but Corral doesn't have like a Stafford-type arm. And as soon as Corral got on the field, I mean, even Aaliyah, who's watching the game, she just goes, whoa, you don't even realize. And Aaliyah watches a lot of football, so she at least, like, it's not like she's just going, ooh, look, throwing it through the air. But it's obvious. And then for me, the other big thought is, I mean, remember when he tried to throw the slants on Alabama? And it's just like, you know, it looks like the difference of when you watch a high school kid that can throw, you know, low 90s. Now, in perfect game, they'll say he throws 97. But, you know, a guy with a 90 to 92 mile an hour fastball, and then they bring in the kid that's just a high school baseball player that throws it somewhere between, you know, 75 and 70, 78, and it just kind of like loops in there. Like, you can't really be that good of a short to intermediate passer without a really good arm, because so much of it is throwing. Those are the tightest windows, and those are where you have to be either remarkably accurate, or you have to just be able to throw it through every single window. And right now, John Rice has not shown that he has, you know, Drew Brees accuracy.
What I thought was interesting on Saturday, I know you're up against the wall here, you got to go. What I thought was interesting on Saturday was he bogged down a few times, and they brought Corral in, and it got them kind of unbogged for a minute, and then they put him back in, and he was effective. There's zero doubt in my mind that there's a package for him. There's zero doubt in my mind there's a significant package for him. What I do wonder is if you ever said, hey, it's your game, you're the guy, and you got to figure it out, you got to adjust on the fly, I just wonder if there's enough to his passing game to be able to pull it off. Because the other thing that's going to start to happen here soon is, it's kind of like, to use the baseball analogy, you know, the kid that comes up from the minor leagues and he tears it up for the first month? That they start getting the analytical film on him. They start figuring him out. And then you start throwing some things at him, and he either adjusts or he's back in the minor leagues. Now that
my
there's
boy Austin Riley.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Austin Riley's a great example. You know, it happened with Javi Baez for years. I mean, he's just now becoming the hitter that they all thought he would become because he's finally figured out how to lay off some pitch. He's figured out some pitch recognition. Anyway, back to Plumlee. The thing with him is the film's out now. There's a lot of film on Plumlee, and they're good defensive coordinators in this league who, if they have the athletes to do it, they're going to put a scheme in place that really limits his running.
Yeah, and I mean, now you just start to prepare by just having, you know, a kid play, a kid that's, you know, a receiver on your scout team. You just have them play quarterback, and so they get used to the speed. And yeah, I think Plumlee is a great enough athlete, and I think he has underrated vision, I think, running the football. And he's going to make some plays, but they're going to be more prepared for it.
Someone makes a really good question here. What happens if Rodriguez leaves? I mean, if you're building your offense around Plumlee or the Plumlee type of quarterback, it does limit even your pool of, I don't know. It's like I've told people all along, it is a soup. We could spend hours on it. It's a super complicated topic when you talk about going full time with a quarterback like him, with who has a lot of upside, no question about it. But it's there's a lot there.
I completely agree.
Who's on your show today, Jeff?
Today, we're actually having Barton Simmons on at 2:25 in the afternoon, and then we'll have Bill Bender of Sporting News. So it'll be a college football heavy show for us as well.
Barton Simmons, he's still in the business? That network's still going?
Well, he's at CBS also.
That's okay. Well, there you go. There you go.
Hey,
good for him.
Salary.
Yeah. Enjoy the job.
I think he also has stock options, so okay. It makes the days a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Have a good day, bud.
All right, guys.
Thanks to Jeffrey for his time today, as always. Again, Jeffrey today, we'll get Ross tomorrow, and then we'll close the week with something else later in the week as well. So, podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, Prim Lawn Care throughout northern Mississippi, custom playgrounds, retaining walls, pool decks, outdoor living spaces with paver patios, forestry mulching, and much more, as well as your normal maintenance of weeding, edging, all those different things. 662-607-7773 or a free quote at gomastercuts.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Southern Craft Stove and Tap. We'll have our picks up tomorrow. Lots of picks in the system. Picking some other games, picking a couple of NFL games, getting into the psychological warfare part of the Neil's pick season. It's located off Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue. Southern Craft Stove and Tap places an emphasis on food and atmosphere, mixing the quality of fine dining with a come-as-you-are environment. Featuring 30 craft beers, offering a high-quality selection of cuisine and libations, Southern Craft Stove and Tap has you covered for any occasion. Join them for lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, or have your favorites catered out. Catering orders placed online currently receive $25 off any order totaling $100 or more. So avoid the chaos of parking on the square. Head over and experience carefully crafted dishes with your favorite Southern ingredients. Southern Craft Stove and Tap, Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue in Oxford. We'll have a Mind on My Money podcast up today. It is brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. They've got clients in more than 20 states, advisors in several states as well. Founded in 1997, Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective research and information, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan that is built just for you. To learn more about Pinnacle Trust, go to pintrust.com. That's pinntrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off your first year's fee. We talked about the mailbag. The mailbag will be up a little bit later this morning. It's basically ready. It is brought to you in part. It's brought to you completely by the Weston Jackson. It's the podcast is brought to you in part by the Weston Jackson, but the mailbag is brought up exclusively by the Weston Jackson. It is also home to Soul Spa. the ultimate luxury spa experience in downtown Jackson, and it's home to Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro, where you can sip on a creative craft cocktail, enjoy their curated wine list. It's open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Chef Caden's mission is to connect guests with the community through local partnerships, so gather at Estelle inside the Westin Jackson tonight.
So, basketball, let's see. This is from the coaches? Yeah, it's from the coaches. Is that right?
Oh, the media poll was yesterday.
Oh, the media was poll yesterday? Yeah. Okay.
I was not part of the media poll.
You did not vote in the media poll?
I was not invited to vote.
Oh, it was an invite thing?
Yes. Last year, I was invited to vote.
I thought they just sent an email out. They didn't?
Not that I'm... I don't believe so.
Oh. So, it's a little more restricted.
Yes, it's more exclusive. I do not know who the...
Then when football, they want everyone to please vote, and they want 1,000, 1,400 votes.
Yes. This is more... I
tell you what I like here. Yep. Second team, it didn't happen. I do like on the first team, all SEC, it's 5 players, yep, not 9 players.
Because usually, not always, but usually when you play basketball, you get to play 5 players at a time.
That's not how the SEC polling usually works. They usually have a lot of guys.
Well, it's because if there's ties or whatever, they just put them all on there.
7 on the second team.
Well, then the second team is going to beat the first team because they're going to be able to
have more depth,
outflank them.
I'm going to play 5 at a time, though.
Oh, well, then depth could become an issue.
Would you rather have the 7 second-team players and rotate or just the 5 first-team players?
Probably take the 5 first teams.
Would you?
Yep.
Go with the Jimmys and the Joes?
Would have a big lead. Yep. When in doubt, take the better players.
You and Jeffrey are on it today.
When in doubt,
wow, this podcast
take
works.
Better players.
First-team All-SEC, Kerry Blackshear at Florida, Anthony Edwards at Georgia, Ashton Hagans at Kentucky, Reggie Perry at Mississippi State and Brian Tyree at Ole Miss is your first team All-SEC in the preseason. Second team All-SEC, Kyra Lewis, Alabama, Isaiah Joe, Arkansas, Andrew Nimbard, Florida, Tyrese Maxey, Kentucky, EJ Montgomery, Kentucky, Skylar Mays, LSU, and Lamonte Turner, Tennessee is that SEC Player of the Year. Kerry Blackshear with the Florida Gators. Let's see. Order of finish. Ole Miss pick 8th in the SEC. Let's do it this way. Let's do buy or sell if you like them higher or lower than their spots. Obviously, that's okay. Harder at the top. I know everybody's really shocked. The Kentucky Wildcats are picked to win the SEC, and obviously, they're ranked number 1 at the moment.
They're going to be really, really good. I actually like Florida to win the league.
Florida's pick 2, so you would buy Florida stock right now.
Absolutely.
At 1 or 2 to win.
Yes.
You can hit the number and win or beat the number and win.
Yeah, I think Florida's a national title contender.
LSU is picked 3rd.
I can see that. So here's the thing.
Very talented.
Here's the
got
thing.
A lot of stuff going on.
And we'll do your game.
Yeah, it's fine.
Here's the beginning thing that I'm going to say. There's 2 teams at the top that I think are better than everybody else.
Okay.
There's 1 team at the very bottom that is worse than everybody else. Then there's a couple of teams at the bottom that I think are going to have a hard time getting into the middle. And then from 3 through about 10, maybe
it's a
even
war.
Maybe even 11. It's not a
I got to stop saying war today. I don't know why I keep saying war today.
It's not
very violent.
You're very violent today.
High strung.
You toss those 3 through 11 in a hat, and they're not equal, but there's not a hell of a lot separating Ole Miss from Alabama, for example. There's not a lot separating Tennessee from Arkansas. I mean, I think Tennessee's better than Arkansas, but marginally.
Auburn, pick number 4.
Again, I think so. They lose their backcourt. They're more talented than last season, but they don't have those veteran guards. Those dudes made big plays for them all year.
Tennessee at number 5 is an interesting spot.
Now, I think they're over. I would sell.
You would sell Tennessee?
I would sell.
You think they're a mid to bottom half of the conference team?
I think.
You think they're in that 7 to 10 range, probably, maybe.
He's a really good coach.
Yeah.
But when you walk into a room and you say, hey, Admiral Schofield's gone, been here for 22 years. Grant Williams is gone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Jordan Bone's gone. Those are 3 people that were the faces of that program. And not only that, Schofield was their energy. Grant Williams is as nice of a kid as you'll meet, a great leader. Replacing him is difficult. And Bone, he didn't get a lot of the headlines because of the other 2, but that dude was scary. and they're all gone to the NBA, that's a lot to replace. Now, they're good, and they have talented players, but that's a lot. I don't like them that high. In fact, if you told me that a team plummeted, that's my prediction.
Alabama, number six. That's an interesting spot. First-year coach Nate Oates there with the Crimson Tide. I'm selling them.
See, I'm buying them.
Are you?
Yeah, they're really talented. Kyra Lewis. They have depth. He's a good coach. They're going to be better coached than they were. They're one of those teams, kind of like Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn. They're just right there all together. So a lot of, you know, but yeah, I at six, I'm not selling at six.
State seven, and the funny thing with them, they've got a lot of talent. Reggie Perry's very good.
Yeah.
I'm selling Ben Howland. I just don't necessarily, there's something about that team, that really the program more than the team, that I just think they're going to get in their own way enough to not be a top half of the league team.
I'm still surprised Perry didn't go pro. Yeah, they got stuff. They always seem to have stuff.
Yeah. There's always drama.
Yeah.
There's something going on with them all the time.
And I think ultimately, so they're at seven. It's a light sell. That's kind of where they belong.
In that little pack.
Yeah.
Ole Miss at eight.
I'm buying. Here's why.
Okay.
Really good coach. Veteran backcourt. Shuler in his second year now as a full-time point guard. Third year as a full-time guard. Tyree's a senior. They have to replace Terrence Davis. There's a lot there. A lot to replace. Listen.
He plays for the Raptors.
I know Terrence disappeared sometimes, but Terrence was also instant offense at times. I mean, he bailed them out several times last year. But they're better in the front court, more athletic. They're going to be able to do a lot more of what Kermit wants to do. They're young in spots, but I like their team. I'll be surprised. And this is assuming that Henson's healthy, and we'll hear more about that today. I'll be surprised if Ole Miss is eighth in the league. I think Ole Miss is as high as third, probably not third. If you told me to slot them, I'd put them in that 5-6 slot and be pretty comfortable with it.
There's no doubt, and we'll see how it meshes, but their front court is so much more talented.
Yes.
Hunter and C and those guys.
Yeah.
To just,
well, and Buffin's bigger. I've seen KJ. He's
there's
bigger.
Such a different talent deal there. And you've got Tyree, you've got Shuler back. You mentioned you've got Buffin and Henson and that kind of deal, as long as Henson's healthy. It feels different.
Yeah. Crowley's a very good player. They've got athleticism.
Is it Crowley, is that right?
Crowley. I'll ask him one day, how do you pronounce your name? And then I'll butcher it forever.
You don't have to do Olenicek anymore.
No, and I'd finally gotten that down.
Yeah.
They're much better. They're a better basketball team.
All of these so far tournament teams?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm sticking with my prediction. I did it.
You think
an
under 500 team makes the tournament?
I think there's a team that goes 8-10 in the SEC and makes the tournament. I do. There are going to, if, as I play the role of therapist, allow me to give you some pre-therapy. If you're an Ole Miss basketball fan, or you're a fan of any other SEC basketball team, with the possible exception of Kentucky and Florida.
And Vanderbilt.
Because
you're discouraged.
They don't give a damn. If you're a fan of the other teams, this is going to be a roller coaster. And if you treat every basketball game with a football mentality, you're not going to enjoy this. There are going to be losses along the way. There might be losing streaks along the way. Games are going to be tight. The league is really good. The coaches are really good. The players are good. Their rosters are deep. Here's the great news. The non-con is so good for everybody that RPIs, or whatever the rating is that we're using now.
What's it called? Net.
The net rating.
The net.
Is going to be so good that every game is going to be an opportunity. Losses won't kill you. Wins will propel you.
Yeah, losses don't matter. How many good wins can you accumulate?
Yeah, and
period.
And in the league, almost every win's going to be a good one.
Georgia at 9, Carolina at 10.
I buy on Georgia because they've got
that kid. What's his name?
I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's a lottery pick.
Yeah.
And on Carolina.
It's Frank Martin. Now, it feels like a regression. It feels like he got way too much juice out of that lemon last year and that might not work out.
Well, they lose Chris Silva, who was one of the best players in the league.
Just killed Ole Miss. Right. Just
killed a lot of people, but he destroyed Ole Miss. Yeah. Ole Miss sent him a flower basket with nice flowers for graduation. Like, thank you, leave.
He was the basketball Jake Mangum, where every time it's just like, good grief.
Well, he was just – he was something in the post they couldn't defend.
Yeah. The matchup was so bad.
Yeah. Oh, you put Chris Silva on Ole Miss's team last year? They're Sweet 16.
Last year?
Yeah. Give him a post presence who could score? Oh, Sweet 16.
How good is C?
I don't know. Potentially really good.
Okay.
We'll see.
Arkansas at 11. You like them?
Yeah, if you're going to give them to me at 11, I'm probably buying. Because
that's the thing here. You've got such margin because it's so low. Because
if you came and told me that Arkansas finished 8th in the league, I'm not surprised. They're going to be better coached. They've got a good backcourt, veteran backcourt. The same thing you like about Ole Miss, they've got it. Isaiah Joe can score. Now they have to replace Gafford, who went in the offseason. It's kind of an indictment on – here's the indictment on Mike Anderson. That Daniel Gafford on that roster, he goes and finds a program and gets in the shape of his life. He's going to play for the Chicago Bulls a lot. They couldn't turn him into a factor in the league. That's the indictment on coaching when you have the players.
No, he went – non-existent against Ole Miss at times. Nothing crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you have a
I covered that game.
You have a kid with his sort of skill set,
mm-hmm.
and you don't take advantage of it, that's on you.
Two teams that are very similar to one another. Good coaches, talent not necessarily there at the moment, lost key players. A&M at 12, Missouri at 13.
Forget
the buy sale, just the teams in general.
I'm a big Buzz Williams guy. I love him. Now, I read a story. I think I put it in 10 thoughts. I can't remember. Probably not this year. But you better get him now. Have fun beating them now because he's going to win. He wins everywhere he ever goes. That's what I mean about this league.
There's no easy night.
Look at the bottom of the league. Frank Martin.
Konzo Martin.
Musselman. Yeah, Musselman's a kind of a weird dude. Good coach. You're not going to show up and out-coach him on game day. Tough league. Nate Oates is a good coach. Frank Martin's a hell of a coach. Rick Barnes is a hell of a coach. I mean, Will Wade's gotten away with it so far. He's a hell of a recruiter.
He's Kirby Smart.
Recruiter. Yeah.
He's Kirby Smart.
Well, Kirby Smart's going to win a lot of games. Might not ever win the big game, but he's going to win a lot of games. That's before you even talk about John Calipari. And you got that lumen on your schedule all the time. You got to go play those guys. And Florida's stacked. Stacked.
Bruce Pearl, Rick Barnes.
Yeah. Bruce Pearl just took Auburn to the Final Four. And probably got screwed out of a shot for the national title. It's a tough league.
Straight coach, and I'm not picking here. I just, obviously, a lot of name notoriety. Ben Howland's a bottom half of the league coach in this league.
Yeah, and he's got a Final Four on two Final Fours on his resume.
That's my point.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
he was the big neon sign of kind of showing me where the coaching is in this league.
See what
right
I mean?
Now.
I mean, you're going to lose games. So if I tell you that a team, let's take Arkansas for example, mm-hmm. does really well in the non-con and goes 8-10 in the league, based on the schedule that they're going to play, they're going to have a net rating that gives them a shot. I mean, Ole Miss was 500 in the league, one game over 500 last year.
Yeah, well, they went 10-8.
10-8.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 9-9. As long as you take care of your business, gets you in.
Yeah, 10-8.
Yeah. And turns out they probably were safely in. Probably would have.
Well, they were an 8 seed.
Would have gotten in at 9-9.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah. They were in.
They were in.
And that's with not doing anything crazy in the non-con. Blew the game at Butler.
Yeah.
Frankly, should have won that game.
Had a nice win on a neutral floor against Baylor.
Yeah.
And is there anything else in the non-con that really stuck out?
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. Had the big wins at Auburn and Mississippi State. Big wins. Beat Auburn at home.
Did you see this about the bomb threat at Tiger Stadium?
Yes.
Catch people up. This will be the last topic of the show. I'm reading from ESPN. University of Alabama freshman is accused of calling in a bomb threat at LSU's Tiger Stadium during the LSU-Florida game Saturday night. Connor Bruce Kroll, 19, of Crozet, Virginia, was arrested and jailed Sunday as a, quote, fugitive from justice. Faces unspecified charges in Baton Rouge. He told police he called in a bomb threat during the Tigers' 42-28 win because his friend was, quote, on the verge of losing a large bet. Authorities did not immediately provide further details about the nature of the threat, then says, quote, protocol was followed efficiently and effectively to quickly ascertain the source of the threat. The protocol, including an immediate sweep of the stadium and a multi-agency investigation, which led to the suspect being identified within minutes and arrested soon thereafter, LSU said. Alabama just said that pranks and threats have serious ramifications, require appropriate response, said the school was cooperating with authorities.
Really, the school wasn't involved in it. It was just a stupid kid, right? So he had a big bet on LSU, Florida?
His friend did, yes. And he was
trying to get the game stopped?
I guess. My question, look, you and I talk about this all the time. We're in a lot of stadiums, very sensitive to this type of thing.
Yes.
I get stupid kid, stupid thing. I think punitively you got to pop him here.
I do too. No doubt.
Now, the statute reads where you can really pop him. I don't know if they're going to do that.
I mean, I don't think they should put him away for the rest of his life or anything.
The statute carries a fine and I think up to 15 years in prison.
Yeah.
That seems a little extreme, but you've got to do something. You cannot let it go.
Because that could have created chaos.
Oh. Could have really changed a lot as far as a lot of people's night.
Well, I mean, imagine when that call comes in.
That's what I'm saying.
What, 102,000 people at that stadium?
Have to take it seriously.
On a Saturday night in the state capital of Louisiana?
Yeah.
In a place that, you know, was already overflowing with people because of natural disaster a decade ago? Or more?
Yeah, you got to pop this.
Yeah. Has it been 15 years since Katrina? It has. 15 years.
No.
Is that right?
No, it was 2006. Five.
Yeah.
2005.
Because Ivan was four.
Yeah. Yeah. 2005.
So 14 years.
So August, September of five.
Yeah, you got to pop him, no doubt. I mean, that give the people credit there. Apparently, if there was panic, no one saw it. But you have to take the threat seriously. Someone phoned in a bomb threat. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
You have to take that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately.
We had two or three in a week's time, my senior year of high school.
Bomb threats
at your school? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody was, I guess, trying to just get school canceled day after day after day. Because I remember we were going to the Delta to play a playoff baseball game. And before we got on the bus, the whole school was out on the football field because they had called in a bomb threat that morning. So everybody's like out on the field before they sweep or send them home or whatever they were doing.
You Hatley people, man.
I know.
Crazy.
Causing all sorts of chaos.
Y'all are nuts.
We were already out of school anyway, so it wouldn't have been one of us.
We had to
go to Riverside.
Yeah, Riverside.
Yeah. Tough place to play.
That is.
Yeah, it's where the football, you put on the football field, the goalpost hung over the baseball field. They put up like a construction net.
So what happens if you hit it?
That happened. You play it wherever it goes. If it goes out, it's a home run. If it comes back in, that's like a ricochet, and you go get that son of a gun.
Wow.
Yeah, but before the game, we're asking questions like, so, going to fill us in? They're like, yeah, don't worry about it. It won't happen. Like, third inning. Ding! Hits it. Comes back in. Starts, everywhere.
So it's like hitting an umpire.
It was an interesting place. At one point, their PA guy over the speakers told the pitcher not to pitch to that guy anymore, talking about one of our players. It was good. It was an interesting event up there.
That's great.
Yeah, it was good. So anyway, what do you got?
Well, I got a few. Still got some bills to pay.
All right.
Let me tell you. Join the Ole Miss football team at the Vaught on Saturday as the Rebels take on the Texas A&M Aggies. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit OleMissTix.com. Speaking of basketball, the 2019-2020 Ole Miss hoops season just around the corner. Don't miss any of the action of Coach Yo's women's basketball team and Coach Kermit Davis's men's team this season in the pavilion. For tickets, visit OleMissTix.com. Join the Ole Miss men's and women's hoops teams on Friday for Square Jam, presented by Oxford Orthopedics on the Oxford Square. Bring the family out to the free event featuring skills contests, player autographs, and a dunk contest to cap off the night. For more information, visit OleMissSports.com. Join the Ole Miss soccer team on tomorrow as they play host to Alabama at 6 p.m. in an SEC showdown. Admission is free, so bring the family out and enjoy some Rebel soccer. And the red-hot Ole Miss volleyball team looks to remain unbeaten in SEC play. They're back at the Gillum Center on Friday as they take on the Arkansas Razorbacks at 8 p.m. Admission is free. More information can be found at OleMissSports.com. And we're brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Also brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. I know several of you have inquired about John on the message board. We appreciate that. Here's what you do. Get in touch with him. You send him an email. Give him a call. You give him some parameters. You give him a budget. He'll give you options that you're not going to find on your own, in large part because he's part of Virtuoso, and also in large part because he's traveled all of his life, and he really knows all the ins and outs, and he can get you not only a deal that you can't find online, he can get you an experience that you can't find online. 901-494-3387. JEdwards@RegencyTravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is a big part of Savannah Square. It's a new 9-acre development, 7/10 of a mile from the Oxford downtown square. If you're coming in this weekend for Square Jam, for the football game, for whatever, get in touch with Harry. If you're thinking about moving to Oxford, retiring in Oxford, get in touch with Harry. Look at Savannah Square. They've got several homes that are in different stages of development. You can check those out. It's just east of North Lamar, just a short stroll from the Midtown Shopping Center. The model homes at 215 William Street. Harry will show you that too. Just get in touch with him, 662-801-5621. He's part of RE/MAX Legacy Realty. And you can check out more of Savannah Square at SavannahSquareOxford.com. And we're brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. They also have Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account. With Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. To learn more, go to liveoxford at bankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
We talked about Russell Wilson a little while ago. His stats so far this season, 1,704 passing yards, 151 rushing yards, 17 touchdowns, zero interceptions on the season.
That's good.
That's pretty good. Patrick Mahomes, the number two person in the MVP race right now, 2,100 passing yards, 80 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns, one interception.
It's not bad
for either. Mr. Mahomes right now. But he's being asked to do way too much for that Kansas City team.
Yeah, yeah.
He has to be elite or they're in bad shape.
I'll tell you what's helped Wilson is having a target like Metcalf.
Mm-hmm. There's a safety blanket to that.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson, number three right now.
Having a hell of a year.
In the MVP race. 17-3, touchdowns, interceptions, 1,644 passing yards. Looking back, that was a very lucky and a heck of a win for the Saints that night.
It was. It was also a night that if you were a Texans fan, you said, we're real.
Yeah.
We're real this year.
Went down there, scared the crap out of them on opening night.
Yeah.
It's going to be all right.
Won, probably should have won. We're good.
Yeah.
And they have been.
We solved a left tackle issue. Oof. It's hanging in.
He's unbelievable. It's almost like the quarterback's better when he's not having to worry about getting hit from behind.
well, especially a guy like Watson, who's never where he's supposed to be, too. It's very hard for an offensive lineman because he's just constantly moving around. He's not in the pocket, per se. So you've got to stonewall and create this huge pocket because you don't know where that guy is.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets sacked a lot just because of the way he's
He sacks himself a lot.
Yeah. So it helps.
But he's got real arm talent, though.
He's good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bears.
I don't really want to talk about it.
I mean, it's cool. If they don't figure this out, it's going to be something that bites them as an organization for a decade.
But there were options they could have taken that would be difference makers.
Real
today.
Options.
Oh, Chris, you put Mahomes or Watson on that team instead of
a little different deal with that defense. Oof.
What are they, 3-3 right now? They'd probably be
5-1.
They'd be 5-1, maybe 6-0. Nobody's popped them.
Christian McCaffrey, number 4 in the race.
Had a hell of a season.
1,618 rushing, 300 receiving, 9 total touchdowns so far.
But he sat out that bowl game that year. That changed it for me with him.
Changed the perception of everything.
Yeah, he didn't play in that Sun Bowl. It was a Sun Bowl. And that spoke volumes about him.
He's on pace, and I get pace. It requires a lot over 16 weeks. So pace for 2,771 scrimmage yards this season, which we'd most in NFL history.
If he can pull that off,
he's the MVP if he pulls it off. No matter what his team does. He's carrying them. They're fine. They're not elite. They're fine.
They're a playoff team.
Probably.
Yeah. Playing a wild card.
Yeah. I don't see them catching the Saints over the course of 16 games.
No. The Saints are in the process of surviving this Breeze thing. And not only that, but improving during the Breeze thing.
Oh, they're still in the race for home field.
Yeah.
I mean.
Or when Breeze comes back, Sean Payton can say to him, hey, you don't have to do everything.
They've got the win over the Seahawks.
Yeah.
They still play the 49ers in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Schedule's not awful.
No, they're solid.
Still got the Titans. Still got the Colts on the schedule.
They're good.
Still got to play the Falcons twice.
Yeah. They got wins.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson, number 5 at the moment.
Yep. He's been good.
He's been good.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine.
I think he's overachieved by what people expected of him, and that has changed the narrative a bit.
We will be back tomorrow. We'll speak to Ross Bjork tomorrow on this here podcast, on this here live stream. So I appreciate all the people watching. All the people that will listen as the day moves on as well. So appreciate it. We'll be back right here tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.